Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back and just looking up at the tote board because we do have there he is. There he is. Dave Goodfriend.
Am I on?
Yep.
You're
okay,
on.
Okay, well, real quick. First of all, Pete and Steve, thanks for the therapy session yesterday.
It was great.
Don't bill me too much for it.
90 for an hour I charge.
Well, that's all?
Minutes.
That's cheap?
Yeah, that's not
you
bad.
Live in Brooklyn. That's way too cheap for Brooklyn. First two optional plays of the day, the Kimmel horse on the good ticket or on the $6 million ticket, the Kimmel horse at Gulfstream, and the Granite's winner at Tampa, $96. Back in it, boys. Let's
and go.
Let's go!
Love it. That is
you
the best news we could hear. There we go. And that's all it took, right? Unbelievable.
Royalties.
Saint Maven. There he goes.
Maybe give us one of the six million if he turns it all the way
around.
How
about that? And what a great way that would be if he claws his way into anything. It would be amazing. Before we look at the board, because we do have time after this Rainbow Six, let's wait till the race goes and we can listen to the seventh. But let's give a quick survey of this sequence, and I can I'll just give you.
What you need?
What I need is the signal to work.
There
it goes. We'll give you a couple of thoughts in here, and I'll tell you what. I mean, I put together a modest play, and if you combined, kind of an A-B main ticket with some backup C tickets, the Cs were 42-40, and the body of A-Bs was 76-80. So if you played them both, it's $120 to invest. The simple A-B prime ticket, $75, I figured as a decent budget. Spent $100 last week at Santa Anita to make three. Quick survey in here, this maiden claimer, 12-5. I thought Danny Bear and Valid Exchange, after there was a couple of key scratches, I'm going to try to tiptoe through with just the two of them. With Danny Boy, the 2 and the 4 Valid Exchange. Then in that second leg, I spread a little bit in that Philly and Mare allowance. Reagan's Odyssey, may just be too good for this bunch, but Dinatown's okay for Mrs. Weber. Pop's Irish Rose is going to be a price, and I used Pop's Irish Rose and Hera, who is going to be part of the pace. So I wanted to spread a little bit in that second leg. The maiden special, that second of three for turf miles, and Can't Buy Me Love appealed, and Can't Buy Me Love was 7-2, I think, the third choice. Amandrea, and also the horse on the rail of Navarro's, who disappointed a little bit in the debut. Mia Sola Mia, 12-1. So three deep in that leg, and then three B horses, three A's, three B's. Then into the second half of the sequence, Global Campaign. And I did not single Global Campaign. I went ahead and added Standard Deviation, the Chad Brown Klarovich, who, looks very muddied up after the two-year-old season. And I don't know if he's going to get enough of a pace to chase, but I used the 3 and the 5. Then big prices as part of the El Prado, the stake, the 11th, which is a mandatory. Siding Spring, 20-1 for Mark Cassie.
Always has had talent.
And actually, Norm Cassie has got Cowboy Culture 20-1, and I mixed and matched them with Mr. Cub and CM Riep, 9-2 and 4-1, and then singled Cafe Americano, a kind of a sink or swim debuter for Chad that certainly going to save ground down inside. And, looks the part and had, strong clocker notes. And Cafe Americano, a Medaglia d'Oro out of the lovely Roxy Gap, who was a very nice 7/8 type filly and mare sprinter. Roxy Gap
sounds like a good approach to this thing, and we'll see what happens. Up near 8 million now. What's the does the clock say zero yet?
There, the clock said zero six minutes ago.
Well, then we probably only have three more. They might. I mean, who knows? Unless they're going to try to get this thing to 10.
Of course, they're going to try to get it to 10. The post time was 3:06, so they're 7 minutes late now, getting started. Meanwhile, it's post time as well at Oaklawn, the third race at Oaklawn coming up here momentarily. You're 10 minutes to the fifth at Fairgrounds, and Fairgrounds has been pretty productive here so far. At New York, you're 19 minutes to the sixth. Santa Anita they're going right in the gate at Oaklawn. They're no messing around at Hot Springs.
Thank goodness. Let's see what's going to happen down there, how it's going to affect things. I think we might have a new leaderboard that we
let's
go through.
We might as well, because if we're going to wait for the crew at Gulfstream to load, I'll just tell you though, price wise, Valid Exchange 9-5. Your favorite, Oh Danny Bear, is 4-1 second choice. So those were the ones that made the most sense, and you know, the two that I thought I ended up using as C's after the scratches. I used Junior Jumper 25-1 as a C, and I used In Gus We Trust as a C. And make note that Crown Romance I threw in as a C as well.
So, yeah, a little bit of a chance to
Drew in up the AE.
That's an absolute opportunity to separate from a lot of people in this sequence.
Well, and took money. It's 5-1 and has speed.
Sometimes I still think you'll see a little bit of extra juice in a pick bet with a horse like that, just based on the amount of money going in and the lack of sophistication of people taking that full look at the horse on the AE list.
Let's get here's Ed, who is eating on the trot. Look he's I'll tell you what, he's just wandering around. Sit out here for a minute, will you?
We're going to interrupt your lunch, Ed. You look like you have something pretty exciting there. Did you? I tried to get into the room, but the guy nearly tackled me. What do you got there?
A salami sandwich.
You know how to use that thing, don't you?
Oh yeah.
There.
Waiting for this race at Gulfstream. A bit like waiting for Godot.
I want to know who the people are that are now getting your tickets in, like. That's what I don't understand about the. I get the drag race to race, but at some point, who's putting a Rainbow Six together 20 minutes after post time?
It's a good point.
Fair question.
I don't really know what's going on.
We're set. Here we go at Gulfstream.
They're off. Slow to go was Byron Bay. Quick to go inside. Oh, Danny Bear from the center. Valid Exchange moves to challenge, and Papa Y makes it a party. Far outside in Crown Romance with Captain Cholo between horses. Gap of two to two steps Lou. Then the newcomer, My Interest, working ahead of Junior Jumper and Malibu Illusion. Three back to the outside, and In Gus We Trust, and Byron Bay is out the back door. They make their way to the half-mile point, and Papa Y has the lead by a length and a half. 22-4 for a quarter speed. Crown Romance is second. Up to third is Oh, Danny Bear. Up to fourth and out wide is Two Steps Lou. Back to fifth is one of the favorites here, Captain Cholo. Meanwhile, the favorite, Valid Exchange, will have to hurry up from there. Passed outside by My Interest, who starts to show some interest in the career unveiling. There's 5/16 to go. 50-1 Bomber, Papa Y, still has the lead. From between horses, Oh Danny Bear on the outside in Crown Romance. Gap of another three lengths back to My Interest, then Junior Jumper as they wheel in. Folks, they went 46-3 for a half mile. There's a 50-1 shot loose. 50-1 shot. Papa Y is clear by four. Where are the dangers? There aren't any. First leg of the Rainbow Six goes to a $100 horse. Seems too good to be true, but it's true. How about Papa Y? Bombs away. Close for second. Oh, Danny Bear or Crown Romance, then My Interest. 118-4.
Wild stuff there. We talked about big balloons before. There's some big balloons for you. That's going to narrow this ticket right away
Yeah, it'll narrow the ticket, except for people who are putting in monstrosities of tickets and basically wipe out everybody that puts in any kind of a budget ticket. And this thing is an absolute disgrace, and it's absolutely going to be a ruination of the sport if this thing continues, because it reeks every single time there's one of these kinds of distributions and you get this kind of a result. The whole thing is really a negative shadow over everything all the time.
I would say if they're going to do it like this, why not go to the old dog track method where it's just every week you force it out? To me, that's a little more palatable than these builds where the money becomes so obscene and then you knock out,
everybody that was putting in for
anything reasonable.
Whereas if it's every week and it's a nice pool and some added money, but
this probably
I will temp. I mean, not.
You'd have to look at it from an economic point of view. Yeah, you put in a big ticket or did you like the horse? Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't put $1,200 into this if it somebody
syndicate. I mean,
if it was laying in the street and I found it, I wouldn't. It's just to me is so counterproductive, and you got people. I suppose it's better that it happens in the first leg than in the last.
The last has happened too.
Yes, many times. Yeah. And we did get a chance to see the board, and if there was any hints, or there certainly wasn't any hints. Here with this horse, and let's go back and see what we're dealing with.
Did you have an all iteration, Ed, or did you like something about this runner?
I didn't really love the favorite, and I used a bunch, so I didn't have all, but that was
at that point. Don't get beat in a spread race, right?
Yeah, I'm really trying to. I'm a believer in some of the strategy I've seen, where if you're going to be six or seven deep in a race like that anyway, the favorite shouldn't be one of your six or seven.
That's interesting. So you did not have the favorite.
Correct.
That's probably very smart. Yeah.
And the favorite was a horse to really wonder about. I kind of leaned heavily on the two. And the two ends up winning the photo. Danny Bear.
Nice move on the rail.
That's the way in which in exotics you can sort of de facto lay the favorite. And one of the reasons why I think some of these arguments against exchange wagering and against the idea of laying horses are so ridiculous, because what is basically any exotic bet but an opportunity to extract value by leaving favorites out?
Yeah,
and in fact, if you wanted to have some sort of betting coup, you don't do it on the exchange where it leaves footprints. There's this bet called the trifecta that's been around for a few decades where you could do that kind of business of pulling a horse if you really wanted to. Anyway, we're off topic here.
Wagering strategy, that's the frontier I think separates myself included, winners and losers. Good opinions aren't that hard to come by, but putting them into action the correct way is much easier said than done. So when it comes to and my reputation precedes me, and I'm sure he thought I was a little tongue-in-cheek, but David mentioned whenever he made the morning line for tomorrow's races at Aqueduct, whatever it was, half the races have a odds on morning line favorite. And I said, is that a feature or a bug? And everyone was like, well, of course that's not ideal, but if you actually don't like those horses, that's the dream day for you.
You
want a day where you can beat two odds-on horses, because in an eight-race card, they're likely to match up somewhere where you can, play against two big favorites in a pick-end.
We should note, of course, that in addition to the action involved in the Rainbow Six distribution, that's a cap horse that somebody scared up.
Based on the rooting, I think there were definitely a few people who had that horse.
I don't know if that was contest or if that's just Rainbow Six people that are satisfied
game, someone.
Where did you go? Where did you run down your ticket a little bit? Where did you narrow things down?
I singled the big favorite in the three-year-old race, Global Affair. I can't think of his name now.
You mean, no. Oh, my gosh. Me neither. Global Campaign.
Thank you. Yeah,
you're close.
That's the single. So it was a big win bet, but the group had consensus. And we talk about on the Friday show, another thing I don't love is if you do legitimately like the favorite, I don't like doubling the cost of my ticket just because, to me at that point, you know, when it's a big ticket already, it's just not, you're betting against yourself. So that's where we took a stand, and we'll see.
You've got a lot of experience putting together group tickets. I think people out there listening are probably...
And people are so supportive of the effort. And
intrigued by the idea. What advice do you have? When you try to put heads together, Do you have a you talk about it as a team. Does the team have a quarterback? Does everybody have equal buy-in? How does that process work? What can listeners learn from your experience so maybe they can get together? I mean, heck, as long as these things, I agree with everything Steve said, but I will also say this. As long as these things exist and as long as more money's going out on these force-out days than is going in, I'm a believer that you should at least look at it because that situation is still so rare.
No doubt.
What can you tell people out there, Ed, that might help people looking to emulate what you're doing, putting together some tickets that might be outside their budget range on these force-out days or in the other rare positive expectation situations we might find?
Yeah, psychologically, first of all, you want everyone on the same page of how it's going to work. So, you know, for me, when I do it, it's, look, the buck stops here. I'll take responsibility if I had a bad opinion or a bad structure, but at some point, someone just needs to make the decision. So, you know, I like that understanding going forward. And then one thing as you do this more and more and get to know personalities and such, I don't necessarily love, like, okay, give me your picks in each race one by one. I prefer asking, give me your strong opinions. Maybe you have one race
weaving
you love,
it up. Yeah.
And if that's where you really have an opinion, then I want to express it. But just giving me three horses in every race, you know,
that's going to hurt you in terms
of
structure.
So, and then another thing I ask is sort of the opposite end of who's your vulnerable favorites.
That's great.
And then if you agree there, then that's a race that maybe you do want to spread because the opinion is, hey, let's beat this horse who might be even money. And I like three horses and you like three horses, but the goal is to get through the race beating the even money.
Yes.
So
that's great. That's great. I think that's a very smart approach. You almost like poll the people who are interested, but then it's your role as the quarterback to spend that extra time on a smart ticket construction, not based out of fear, but based out of where the opinions are and where you believe the equity lies.
And, you know, it can be tough because some people don't understand, like, oh, how did we let that horse beat us? You know, because there are people, oh, I'll give you $20, and then you hear.
Right, right. You don't really want those. It sounds like you have some partners, though, who get it and
yes.
you can rely on. And you find that, I think the only way to do that is over time. Just like any friendship, there's going to be some situations that work and dovetail better than others. Just because somebody's like your friend in life doesn't mean they're going to be a good betting partner.
And another thing I like, too, is sort of a diversification of opinions. One of my buddies really likes digging into sort of trainer patterns and
yes,
stuff like
that's
that.
Great.
And obviously there's trainer stats and all the PPs, but you know, he worked on the back stretch for a couple trainers, so he just kind of a little insider approach, and you know, he'll say, you know, this one might be live at 20-1 that my numbers would never show why. So
that's very smart.
Getting that extra sort of thought, you know, similar to workouts. I don't know if a horse worked well or not Derby week, let alone this week.
Right.
So you know, sometimes you will take a peek, and I'm not looking to find a favorite with reports like that. I want to be pointed out either a bad favorite or a horse I would have missed otherwise.
Sometimes, though, I mean, just to know that the favorite has some strong secondary angle makes it a little bit easier to
if
commit.
I was singling already, you know, then you kind of like the boost in confidence for sure.
Yeah. Take a look with 4 minutes to post. You got the next mandatory. This is the third. It's Santa Anita. What did we do in here, Ed?
We did something because I had to pick it for the charity event.
Right. You're defending your title. How's that going so far?
Mid-pack, I had the winner at Laurel, which was bet down to 2-1. But, you know, this is a group where you want to find the winners, basically. Frank Angst had the place
the Mexican,
cap.
The Mexican horse.
So that put him on the board pretty good. But, yeah, who'd I go with here?
Fairgrounds.
I have Dabster in the San Marcos.
I didn't know what to do with Dabster. I think I picked him as the backup.
I am on Tiger Beach.
Tiger Beach, the Bill Morey runner with Figueroa up. Son of Treasure Beach. Getting that Galileo blood in there. What kind of price on the board? It was 3-1 in the morning line. So.
Yeah, 7-2. And the favorite, fairly logically, is Tough It Out, the saddler, Aronis Gelding. The Grayson Gelding and a Nick Alexander bred horse that they took away from Rockingham Ranch for $40,000 and put into a Santa Anita turf starter that came off back January 18th, and he kind of just ran around there. And really, I thought the race came down to Tiger Beach and Tough It Out. I mean, those were the
two. That was my decision as well between the two. And I did think Tiger Beach would be a longer price, so,
He is. He's 4-1 right now. Let's run down the field real quick. Orchestral, Mike Pipey with Tyler Bays, 7-1 from the rail. The 9-year-old Larod Danimo Gelding, Tough It Out. We mentioned 5-2. Brees Blanc riding for John Sadler. And Carolyn Connolly handling the book for Brees Blanc these days. Kentucky Colonel's taking money, 7-2 on Kentucky Colonel. The Mandela with Bayerano, 7-2. Plum Dandy, 39-1. Sal Gonzalez, Eswan Flores, 5-year-old Medagliadoro. And Canada, Margie Cantrell, longest shot on the board, 52-1. With Octavio Vergara, Tiger Beach, Bill Morey, Arabito Figueroa, 7-2. Gryffindor, now a 4-year-old gelding for Richard Rosales, and Edgar Payeras riding, 27-1. 22-1 on Contest Daddy-O, Conquest Daddy-O, the Scat Daddy gelding, now 6. And 5-2, Christie's co-pilot, a lucky pulpit, and on the wire at Tampa Bay. Christie's co-pilot, lucky pulpit, 5-2 actually, has taken steady money for Richard Baltus on the outside. Joel Rosario rides. So really favoritism, four horses, 5-2, 5-2, 7-2, 4-1.
Yeah. Different ways to go. I see where you're heading with your pick in here, Ed. Who did you end up settling on for the contest, Steve, for the charity contest?
Tough It Out, the Sadler.
If you do like Christie's pilot at 5-2, though, it's red and roulette, and it's paying $30.
Have you participated in those pools?
No, it's you can't get it on my employer's ADW.
That's right, that's right.
I have not taken the plunge.
You're just saying out of interest.
I mean, and I've given it its lumps for sure, but look, if I thought I could get a $30 if Christie's co-pilot wins, I wouldn't hesitate.
You happen to be there now? I mean, you know, we got to try to make money here at some point any way we can. Of course, you probably have to hug the machine and see what that price is when they're going into the gate before you even bother.
That was an 11-1 winner at that beat the even money favorite at Tampa on the wire.
Interesting that someone was yelling for the wire at even money.
Yeah, that must not be a contest play. I'm guessing
single and something maybe. Yeah.
Well, and that's got to be a favorite of yours. Tench, the favorite, was a Tim Ham trainee.
Oh, yeah, Ohio guy. Do you remember Big Bamboo? Was that him?
Of course.
Tim Ham, Blazing Meadows Farm.
Yeah, Too Much Bling was him.
Too Much Bling was what's her name out in Arizona?
Now I gotta look. I thought he had. He's an Ohio bred, wasn't he?
Originally,
I'll do a little bit of work.
Yeah,
Too Much Bling.
I thought he had him in the debut and sold him for.
It's interesting. I'm not thinking
curious. Of Roy H., are you?
No.
Not Roy H. Who is the horse Burrell rode? The sprinter? Ran in Washington in Arizona?
Too Much Bling's first races were in Ohio.
Interesting.
But I'm not
seeing. Was he an Ohio bred?
This doesn't go back all the way.
Yeah, he was an Ohio bred.
Oh, there it is.
How about that? Good job, Ed. I don't remember that part. I don't remember that portion of his career.
Good memory. Yeah, before I had Ham and then Baffert.
Yes.
You got something cooking here, Ed? Your head's on a swivel.
I was seeing what my prices were in the horses I'm live to at Gulfstream.
Gotcha.
And how many you got here in the second leg?
I have 2, 3, 7, 9.
2, 3. The even money favorite is the 2. 3 is 17-1. 6-1 on the 7 and 9, 7-2 on the 9, and that's that interesting group, the mild turf race, the state bred fillies and mares. We're also getting close with that race done at Tampa. We're getting close to the stakes sequence at Tampa Bay Downs. 24.80 for Zorb. I'm trying to record all these numbers and. 2480 and 840, so nice. 33-20 for those that had a piece of Zorb.
This leaderboard is going to change a bunch the next time we see it. We haven't really gone over it too much lately. We still have Bob Gilbert expanding the lead, 249.80. Tim Jacobs had such a big day yesterday, 212.60. Mike Yurcich, 199.20. Chris Littlemore, 194.40. John Pinder, 193. Then in sixth place, we have Darlin Laborde, been up there a long time, 191.40. Tie for seventh between Steve Hartshorn and Kyle Fitzgerald, 182.40. And then the top 10 is rounded out with Steven Gravina, 174.80, and Robert Reedy, 174.20. We're guessing the cut line is going to be right around there, right around that 175-180 area. So, I mean, it feels like we know 8 of our 67 semifinalists at this point. It's going to be furious competition to see what happens with the remaining 59 slots.
On that topic, as they're starting to load, Pete, what, you know, what is the cutoff that is precarious, would you say? The people that are, you know, in the 30s and 40s, that what they've got to do.
I mean, at this point, you gotta get into it quick. I don't think it's just mathematically going to work out to just try to grind from there. If you're down as low as 30, 40, you need a cap horse and you need it quick, I think, to really have any realistic chance, because so many of those cappers are going to be covered later.
Right.
You know, I mean, I guess you could try to run the table and just hit every single bet, but realistically, from a math point of view, at this point, you know, it's time to get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I mean,
here we go.
Even
Conquest Daddy-O, Plum Dandy in between them up close, and so is Canada. Tiger Beach a close-up fifth as they pass the stands the first time. Christie's Co-Pilot is on the extreme outside. Orchestral is a bit tough to handle. He's at the back of the pack today, racing two in front of Tough It Out. And at the back, it's Gryffindor. Eight lengths covers the field. It's Plum Dandy showing the way, prompted by Conquest Daddy-O second. Two and a half more. Kentucky Colonel gets a good trip in third. Then comes Canada fourth. Orchestral is down at the rail in fifth. Christie's Co-Pilot three wide. Outside Tiger Beach, two clear of Tough It Out and Gryffindor. They're heading to the half-mile pole with Plum Dandy, the long shot leader, in front a length and a half. Conquest Daddy-O is second by three. Kentucky Colonel reserved in third. Orchestral now asked to pick it up. Tiger Beach right next to him, fifth and five, now four lengths off the lead. Outside of him comes Canada. Tough It Out is trying to mount a bid and looking for racing room. Tough It Out is starting to pick it up. Christie's Co-Pilot three wide and Gryffindor trails. Kentucky Colonel can wait no longer, and he inhales Plum Dandy at the top of the stretch and gets first run. Kentucky Colonel the one to catch. Tiger Beach on the outside. Tough It Out is next, and then Christie's Co-Pilot inside the furlong pole, and it's Kentucky Colonel clear by two and a half. Tiger Beach is trying hard in second, but Kentucky Colonel is gone. Kentucky Colonel wins it by about two and a half. Photo for second will end up going to Tough It Out, narrowly defeating Tiger Beach. Photo for fourth, Plum Dandy in front of Christie's Co-Pilot.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, that's 9-2, and you know, for those that were parsing the favorites, and we noticed this yesterday, that, and we discussed it, one of the oldest maxims when the public is having trouble finding a favorite, when it's that tightly bunched, you should be looking for the next
Absolutely.
Tier.
Absolutely. No, 9-2, that's a good price, I'm guessing, for many in the top 20 or 30, you know, probably aren't displeased with picking up 15 or 16 in a race like that.
No, you got to start thinking about positioning. And we talked about this before, Ed, with the races that happen in the first part of tomorrow, when you're going to try to go from 67 down to the final 10, it's early card stuff. Not always the sexiest opportunities.
Right.
The $15 you can move up now to get closer to that top 10. If you're one of those people with the one already at 180, especially, I'm thinking less about protecting my spot now and more about
Absolutely.
Let's get this going to where I'm going to be in the top 10 when we cut it one more time.
I mean, we saw last year, you know, Chris opened up, but I mean, those races at the final table, for better or worse, just there weren't opportunity either.
Yeah, well, and we were talking about that before too.
And that's in play for sure tomorrow as well. So, you know, yeah, you're.
Especially if that last race at Santa ends up coming off the downhill.
Right.
It could be very static. I mean, one thing we have not seen at the final table is much movement over the years.
Right.
We've had, I don't know how many years we've done it now, 5 years, and it's been most of the time, I think it's been four leaders have won and one second place has won. There has not been a ton of movement, and if you get a race like the last one being off the turf, it's only going to contribute to that stasis. They need to start moving now.
How do you adjust at this point, B, to make the final table more volatile and more less of a chess match and more of a free for all?
Well, the one idea that's been mooted that I think has a lot of merit is trying to find a way to incorporate a live bankroll element when you get down to the final 10. You know, that's we tried that at the World Horse Players Tour to do a live bankroll final table, and I think it does a lot of things. It's a lot more dynamic. It creates a product for television that, and you know, Dave Goodfriend here yesterday was talking about the importance of finding a way to get this event on TV. I think if you end up with a live bankroll final table, there's a lot of positives, and I really don't see personally any negatives.
Yeah, no, you have to spice it up a little bit, and you know, for better or worse, this time of year, the Sunday races. They've tried the Thursday to Saturday thing, but
was not popular with players.
And then just the Thursday races, know, talk about Sunday races this time of year. Thursday, you're really up against it. So, I think there's some things worth discussing, and I'm very interested. I don't know if either of you know him, Pete, maybe a chance more than Steve, but Andrew Neamy, popular poker vlogger, he's going to be doing some work with us for Derby.
Oh, cool.
And he's coming down here, you know, just to never been to the races.
Oh, neat.
So I'm eager for him to see and kind of pick his brain about, you know, this is exciting. There's big money on the line, but it's just no translation.
There's another level to come.
You know, 50,000 and 100,000 people watch him play poker on YouTube. And, you know, if I did a video, I mean, more people would watch me drink Perrier than they would watch me handicap a race. So, but there's got to be
something. I'd watch you eat a chicken wing.
Yeah. Stay tuned. That's tomorrow. We're going to Hattie. Well, it's Nashville chicken. We're going to do the hot ones motif.
Oh, I like
Jason's
it.
Jason's going to ask me questions while I eat the
hottest
chicken.
Oh, that's good. That's good. A little derivative, but good.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a copy, but
it's an homage. It's not a copy.
Well,
it's an homage.
And on Hot Ones, they say we welcome them. Just make sure you give us a plug and let everyone know.
Oh, there you go. That's totally cool. I didn't even know that. Ben.
Yeah, no, they encourage
imitation and flattery and all that. But I agree. I think TV is a topic that we're going to be hearing more and more about. Certainly, if I have anything to say about it over the course of the next 12 months, it is a way to introduce people to this great game and this great gambling game. And you know, racing, we've got a lot of work to do if we want to compete in this ever-changing marketplace of gambling in this country. I still think, and you know, I had a long conversation with Pat Cummings about this on the blog recently. It gets back to the old saw about the Chinese character being the same for crisis and opportunity. That's where we are, man. You know, there is this opportunity with gambling becoming destigmatized from coast to coast, and the fact that I truly believe we have the most intellectually challenging, interesting gambling game. But if we don't do things in terms of aggressive marketing, in terms of fixing pricing, in terms of not just fixing pricing in the sense of the cost of the wagers, but also literally fixing prices, I believe, like, as in the odds don't, you don't try to market the game and a horse that's 5-2 goes off at 8-5. Like, that's tough stuff get into this new realm. Radical changes are going to be needed, but I think we have the best product, and I think we can continue to not only survive but thrive. And I do think the TV prong would be an important piece of it.
Yeah, and it is. No, it's no think about it. I mean, you need to get in front of people, and, you know, TV now to me is just a catch-all, too, for compelling
Internet,
streaming content.
Absolutely.
I mean, like Live at the Bike, you know, like I said, I mean, tens of thousands of people are watching people play poker in Los Angeles. And
it's wild.
You know, they love it. And, you know, there's a strategy element to it, and I fight that even at my job is, you know, oh, two core, two in the weeds, two. No, the people you want you want them to want that content. Like that.
It has to be understandable, but you can't dumb it down too much either. You have to make some tough decisions.
You have to definitely, it's a thinking game, and to talk about it as such, I see as a benefit. So.
I would tend to agree, and I think there's a lot to be learned from the poker world, so I'm interested to see
the discussion we had yesterday with David Gutfriend
touched on a ton of that.
He certainly knows that space.
Curious to see how he's been doing. He had those two nice hits, got himself up off the mat, was over 90 on the quote unquote good entry. Last we heard,
that's a movement.
Yeah, so I'm excited to that's a story that I'm excited to follow.
I mean, getting him to tomorrow is that
he's at 90. He's at 95.80. He's tied for 135th, and that is with his $6 million ticket.
And momentum. It's funny. It shouldn't matter. But it does.
Yeah, I mean, thinking positive. I mean, who doesn't experience that just playing the races day to day, let alone for that kind of money? So,
if he's at 95.80, explain to people, Pete, at 95.80, so the cut line right now is 120, essentially. So he's $25 out of the cut line. So is he looking at that, or is he oblivious to that right now and not even worry about it until the short strokes later this afternoon?
He probably devised his strategy this morning, and when he was looking at horses with the idea of getting at least one of them to 180 by the end of the day, or 175 by the end of the day. So I'm guessing he's still thinking a few moves ahead. If he has a shorter price he likes now, I think he'd probably consider taking it on that good ticket to get that incremental movement. But it's still, when he looked at these races, I'm sure he was looking at the more mid to longer odds range. His second ticket is probably just cap horses alone.
Now, his situation and an extreme speaks to what we spoke about looking ahead to tomorrow. He's looking to win the $6 million.
That's right.
So he might not even be playing for 180 today.
That's
because
right.
Because 180 probably puts
could
him
be very
out of touch
hard
tomorrow.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
He probably has a target of 200 plus.
That's a great point. That's a very good point. It's for him.
Which isn't to say, you know, it's nice to cash, but
if he loved something, especially in a mandatory, though, I think he wouldn't. I don't think he'd turn his nose up at this point at a 6-to-1 shot.
Sure.
In a race that he had to play. But you're right. I mean, it's still all about cappers for him.
Let's see if we can't pick up Gulfstream's call here in the second leg of the Rainbow Six. And here it is.
Far outside, Dinatown trying to get over, but she'll be stuck a bit wide as they charge to the first turn. It's Hira who now comes through to take the lead. Hira leads, but on the inside, that's Pop's Irish Rose who cuts the corner and puts her neck back on top. Settling in third, well, a bit keen is Regan's Odyssey. To her outside is Dinatown, so the favorites are third and fourth, and they work ahead of Troya. Una Luna is down at the inside, and from between horses goes right on. Then it's Diamond Love, and on the outside, it's Trilby. To the backstretch they race. They went 23-3 for the opening quarter speed, and Pop's Irish Rose and Francisco Masonette with the lead by a neck. Up on the outside here and now, second, Dinatown is three wide third. Regan's Odyssey needs a place to work. She's fourth and down toward the inside. Troya's on her back fifth. Then back to right on. Retreating now is Troya toward the inside, and Trilby, and Diamond Love is at the back. They went 48-4 for the opening half mile. They swing around the far turn. Pop's Irish Rose comes under pressure to hold the lead. Three wide Dinatown from between horses. That's Hira. Waiting in the wings, fourth is Regan's Odyssey. Una Luna gets started on the outside. Pink and black colors and charging hard. Three quarters, 112-4, and they're at the top of the stretch. It's Dinatown who comes away with the lead. Hira battles on. Regan's Odyssey and Una Luna down the stand side. Una Luna now charging to take the lead. Here's a late run from Trilby from dead last. Una Luna has the lead. Trilby on the outside up into second. They come to the wire. It's too close to call. Trilby really motored to make that really close. Una Luna alongside with Dinatown third in 136-3.
I think Ed got done right on the
12-1 shot that caught the. And Una Luna was a bit of a mojo horse with some angles, in fact, attached to her, and this race, the complexion changed two, three times from off the turn.
I thought I had the race surrounded, but pretty heady ride there to make the last move in this case, and he had enough, and I think the six got there, unfortunately for me.
Well, hold on, let's watch it in quasi slow mo. There's the red, and yeah, looks like it.
Yeah,
the six is gone. Six is going to knock out another several hundred thousands of tickets. So far.
I mean, I would say anyone alive at this point is playing for six figures.
Yeah, it's well. I mean, I think to Steve's earlier point, what happens with this bet, especially with the first two results like this, is they're running it as a benefit for the groups.
Let's take a look at what's going on at Oaklawn, and we'll take Oaklawn, and then we'll turn our attention to Tampa and the start of a number of things, including the Naira cross-country pick five. And but right now, a maiden group at Oaklawn, maiden special, and this was a nice little race. The fourth, Zippy Lou, we talked about yesterday, even money favorite. We had Marshall Graham, and Marshall had a pretty good expectation for the Storm and a Half Philly in this spot, and she's even money for Brad Cox with Fernando de la Cruz in the irons. Then it really some huge prices here after Saved by an Angel, the 10, John Prather and Ricardo Santana Jr., 5-2 second choice. If you aren't on one of those, you've got double digits.
Marshall having a quietly excellent day, still in about the same position on the scoreboard, but that means he's increased his bankroll a whole lot. 176 looks like he's going to be very likely for the semifinals tomorrow.
Oaklawn.
Lady right up on the inside, and Portion, there's five of them very close. Racing in sixth is Saved by an Angel on the far outside. Just to her inside is Cadillac Magic. Racing in seventh, Our Lucky Star has a rail spot and is six lengths off the lead from eighth. And then comes Amazing Honor, Lil Tater, Wild Dez, and Vans Flying Cowgirl at the back end of the field here as they take that far turn. Zippy Lou, plenty of company here. Rich Princess alongside. Joy in the Journey on the outside is third. Portion bides her time on the inside and fourth. And then the Grace Saved by an Angel easily within range toward the outside. Little Tater begins to kick in a rally along with Amazing Honor. Cadillac Magic swings out for the stretch drive. Still plenty of chances here. Zippy Lou big time confronted and passed as going to the lead is Joy in the Journey. Up on the far outside, Little Tater splitting those two is Saved by an Angel. Final 16. Joy in the Journey, Ramon Vasquez.
33-1.
Saved by an Angel, one last gasp. Joy in the Journey,
to
half
one.
Length. Saved by an Angel, second.
Another
cap. Third and Portion.
That is going to shake things up yet again. We knew there were going to be a lot more cap horses today. That's how it's planning out. And really only just the beginning here, Steve, as it's only 12:50 local time, and we're barely underway at the West Coast.
Well, and the... This is a Ramon Vasquez winner at 33-1.
And welcome to the At the Races airwaves, a loyal listener of this program.
Absolutely.
And somebody who's doing very well in this contest. Also responsible for one of the great photos in the history of the NHC, Bobby Schumacher. What's going on, my man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Pleasure. Steve, love your show.
Thank you, Bob.
Every day I take my son to school, and we're always listening to Steve Bick. So pleasure to be on with you guys.
Glad to have you.
How's the day gone so far? I saw you in the sauna this morning, of all places.
Yeah. One winner so far. I had the mandatory race at Santa Anita, 9-2. So I'm at 116 right now. So I have a few bullets that I'm prepared to fire, including a race coming up here at Gulfstream. Really like a horse. So
excellent.
We'll see what happens there. And I like the rest of the mandatory. So I feel like I'm still in a good spot, even though we've seen a lot of long shots.
That's right. I mean, does that affect you? How do you tune that out?
I have the headset on, listening to my favorite tune.
That's awesome. Poker
texting,
style.
Yeah, texting my best buddy. We're just talking, just trying to not pay attention to the noise, because you don't know if somebody's out there playing cat and mouse. You don't know. So
I will try to find that photo and send it around. But for folks who don't know, it's was it in the ESPN article maybe
it
from
was,
a couple years ago?
The Rolling Stones.
Rolling Stone piece. That great. That guy was really nice. That was a big time writer.
It was one of their big
yes.
guys on the roster.
Right.
Jim Mulvihill had attracted to come out. What's the story of the photo? Did you know about it beforehand?
No.
And what's going? And what are you? You got the full. You're like the full whip. You look like an English jockey in that picture.
It was 2 years ago. I had two tickets, and I'm sitting at the table with Anthony Trezza and my buddy John Hurd, and we're trying to figure out what I want to do with the second ticket because I was further back than I was on the first. And we were looking at this maiden claiming race at Fairgrounds, and John Hurd put me onto a first-time starter, and I said, hey, why not? I can see it. And when they turned for home, he was in the lead, and I was doing everything I could on my end here in Vegas to make sure he stayed in the lead. So that's the story behind that. Had no idea that they were taking pictures, and then I saw it on Sunday night. You know, when we were in here and they were doing all the presenting, somebody came around and showed that they had taken that picture of me, and lo and behold, it ended up in the Rolling Stones article.
That's so cool. How did you get into racing and contests specifically?
My father was a huge part of my life, and he took me to Charlestown starting when I was about 4 or 5 years old. And then we'd visit Laurel and Pimlico. Always loved horses. Got out of it after he passed away for a while. And then just started playing on Derby Wars and horse tourneys about 5 years ago, and had some success early, and I've been hooked ever since.
How many NHCs have you been to so far?
I've tried twice, and I've gotten in both times.
That's so great.
2 or 3 years. Last year I took off. My daughter was about to be born at the time, so I didn't want to leave my wife at home with a newborn.
Probably very wise.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's great to have you back,
yes.
And great to have you in contention here.
Yes.
How many of your, if you don't mind saying, nobody's listening live, so you're not giving anything away here.
Sure.
How many of your optional bullets, your competitors, I should say, aren't listening live.
Right.
How many of your optional bullets do you have left in the holster at this
point? I've got 7.
Okay.
I'm about to use one here at Gulfstream, and I do like some turf racing at Santa Anita, and I really like the back end of this Tampa card.
That's great.
And I've got some good opinions on some solid prices, so long way to go. Unfortunately, I did lose a couple of the optionals earlier, but I'm very confident here at the back end of this Tampa card.
You got to take your shots, and we appreciate you coming
Absolutely.
By and
checking pleasure.
In with us.
Thank you very much.
We'll
Pete.
Be talking to you
Thank
very
you
soon.
Bobby. Yes. Twitter, what's the Twitter?
At 2 Turn Turf Races.
Okay.
And is it,
yes,
it's sir. Two, it's
yeah,
the numeral.
Yeah,
two, yeah right?
I, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you again, guys. Pleasure.
Cheers,
Bobby
buddy.
Schumacher.
Thank you very
much. Cool. And, awesome. Yeah, that's a perfect example of you know, somebody that is had that quiet first day and yet is in decent shape heading into the deep end of the pool the second half of the day's racing. And at Tampa Bay, we're up to the 8th race, and this is going to start the stakes sequence. And the Tampa Bay Stakes itself, heart to heart, figured to to go favored, and is undoubtedly the horse to beat. But there's really been this since the middle of last year. Where is he? Where is Lynch with heart to heart? And I found it hard to put him on top selection wise. I'm a big Inspector Lindley fan, and 3-1 isn't exactly what I had in mind for Inspector Lindley, but that's what the number is. 9-2 on Divisit Darrow, who I don't know if he's got enough of a pace to chase. Kerban is actually your 2-1 favorite ahead of the 2-1 on Heart to Heart.
That's kind of wild. I mean, I Heart to Heart is, this is supposed to be such a good spot for him, but then you look, and sometimes when you see such a veteran horse and then having the gate issue last time, like that can be a sign that the salad days are ending. I don't know what to do in this race because Heart to Heart should be able to control it. I feel like these closers, I just can't get behind them. I mean, Divisadero, horse we've spent more words talking about probably than just about any other in the history of the podcast I do with Jonathan Kinch, and I'm always a sentimental favorite. It's a cool race. I don't know. I can't see how it's going to be run in my head. For me, it's not one to bet. Much more one to watch.
You know, one thing to watch as they start to load. When we come back and we get the next update, I want you to notice, Pete, how many of the female players have forged into the top 67? Because yesterday they were not. They were not prominent. But now suddenly I think there's 7 or 8 that have slipped in. I just, the names just kind of jumped out at me.
Christy Moore, certainly.
Cheryl Knepper, Emily Kirilou. I saw a couple of others as well that I'm going to try to write them down as they swing by. Just about set for Richard Grunder at Tampa, and this is going to start the cross-country pick 5 as well. Here we go at Tampa.
From the outside, the favorite, Heart to Heart, is away quickly. Cheyenne's Colonel is there toward the rail. Coming away third is Irish Strait. Up on the outside, Admiralty Pier will look to cross over. And the last horse away is the late running My Barley. Under the wire for the first time, heart to heart, and now Laperu goes to work on getting him relaxed on the front end. He moves clear now to lead by two. Cheyenne's Colonel with a ground-saving trip toward the rail. Second, Irish Strait in a perfect spot in the two-path. Now racing along third. Admiralty Pearl is up on the outside now fourth. Inspector Lindley skims the rail fifth. That's Corban from between horses, a close-up sixth. Then it's three lengths farther back, Divisadero, and the trailer is My Barley. But it's only eight lengths from front to back as they settle for their journey up the backstretch. Heart to heart, the Maker's Mile winner has the lead now, three parts of a length. Cheyenne's Colonel, Badgers on the outside second. Then it's two lengths farther back, Inspector Lindley creeping up a closer third. On the outside, Irish Strait is fourth. Corban will need racing room now fifth. Way out on the outside, Admiralty Pearl is now sixth as they swing around the far turn. Heart to Heart is still there. And now moving up on the outside, Irish Strait, Cheyenne's Colonel between horses, Divisadero launching a bid and moves four wide for the drive. It's wide open as they fan four across the track.
Here he comes.
Along the rail, Heart to Heart is digging in gamely. Irish Strait is surging at the leader's second. Here's Inspector Lindley. Ortiz works out a trip toward the rail. And up on the outside with a late run is Divisadero. And on the far outside, here comes Corban in a blanket finish in the Tampa Bay Stakes. Running time on the board, 140.35.
Inspector Lindley was dead in the water on the turn. He was dropping out of it.
Very weird.
And an unbelievable re-rally by Inspector Lindley, who I had basically given up on the turn. I mean, I spread to start the cross country pick five, as well as the regular pick five. But Inspector Lindley was my pick on top. That was unbelievable.
Very wild race. Just kept finding and digging and good, terrific job keeping the horse running.
Really? Look at him. He's a tiny little thing.
Yeah.
I didn't realize. Look at him there. You just compared to the rest of that field. He looked like a Great Dane.
Athletic, but smaller for sure.
Well, we got 3-1. I guess that's all right. It was 5-1, I think, morning line, and that's all right. We'll take that to start the pick five sequence, both at Tampa as well as the cross country pick five, which is really fun today. It's got the Wingfield coming up.
Yeah.
It's also got the King Cotton from Oaklawn, and then it's got the other two stakes that follow this.
I'm so excited. I mean, I feel like we talked about TV regarding tournaments. Still, TV regarding the sport itself, still it's such a valuable tool, and I love the idea of what they're doing with these Fox broadcasts and
which
bringing
just
in the
started
races.
Right now as we speak.
As I question their new analyst, my co-host JK, I don't know what that decision was all about. But other than that, those shows are pretty good.
Well, it certainly is a nice enhancement, you know, in terms of someone that is betting. I mean, is really betting, pretending to bet.
I kid around, but of course it is great to hear him talking about his single and this and that, and he just can talk about it in such a way that makes the betting piece of the equation so exciting. And I thought he did, in all seriousness, a great job last week.
Yeah, no,
and look forward to having him on in the near future. Definitely some interesting stuff going on this leaderboard. I want to see where some of the players that I had identified as players to follow coming into the day are. Curious about Paul Matisse, if he's gotten anything going. Yep.
He's all right. 880.
Along.
He's in good shape.
Yeah.
880. So almost, almost 9-2 or 7-2 for Inspector Lindley.
Yeah, it's very smart.
So that's fine. And Divisadero paid $5 to place.
I thought he was going to get there for a minute. My old friend. I would have felt disloyal for having passed the race and not having bet it. But it's good to see him still running well. He's a cool, very cool old horse who certainly owes me nothing.
Well, Casey, we're going to look at Aqueduct for the stake there, the Wingfield, which came up very good. Pull up the Wingfield, and we'll do it after the break, after the Wingfield. Then we can do a little bit of an update on the leaderboard, and we'll be. Tampa will be the next, the Tampa ninth will be the next mandatory. And
that's going to give you, yeah, that's the 20, yeah, 22. That's the Philly race, the Suncoast.
Yes.
And that I'm anxious to see that board, actually. They're finishing up at Laurel, where you had a 3-5 shot, nursing the lead, and looks like he's going to get home. But some thoughts about the Wingfield.
Absolutely.
Or actually, wait a minute. Hold on. No, this is I take that back. That is not the Wingfield. That's the 7th at Aqueduct.
We can roll through the field here.
Let's take the break because we're right on point. We're right
let's
on the
it.
Hour point, and it's a perfect chance to get away, and we'll come back. And so we do have a little bit. We have 4:34 is the Wingfield post time, so we got time for it. Let's step away. We are at the Treasure Island, and we are deep into day two. Things will start to really tighten up here over the next 2 hours, and we'll be back right after this.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 384643.
Now, back to At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I drink whiskey, second time I lose a drink gin, third time I lose a drink anything cause I think I'm gonna win.
Ooh, Las Vegas, ain't no place for a purple like me, no. Ooh, Las Vegas, ain't no place for a purple like me. Every time I
We're back at the races and back at the NHC, the National Horse Players Championship, and just had a 9-1, another short field 9-1 winner at Santa Anita.
And again, as we get down to it, there's going to be many more people will have had that horse today than had it yesterday, with that same idea in mind of trying to get some points where others aren't getting them, just to try to, like the separator concept that Gibson Crothers, as far as I know, introduced in multi-race wagering, that's a thing in contest too. And a race like that, those are points. Even, you know, Dave Goodfriend talked about it, you're not getting the full benefit of your place price, but still, if you can get that 20-80 for the win there, that's going to help you very much with what you're trying to accomplish here on day two, moving day at the NHC.
Well, $20 for that winner, and Mike Pipey sending out Drayden Van Dyke, short of easy, I think, if I'm not mistaken, was the name. And I think they're giving us a refresh on the board. Otherwise, Robert Gilbert, who, speaking of separation, has got himself a $37 cushion right now.
That's a beautiful thing. A 10-1 shot ahead of the field, basically. 265.40. Absolutely great spot. I haven't started thinking ahead yet and doing the math on what it's going to take to get to the final table, but I mean, I'm pretty sure he's going to be there at this point with that total. Terrific how he's been able to stack the days. Of course, you got to do well on all three, but Robert Gilbert, certainly the story so far at this year's NHC, backing up a big performance yesterday with one today. I wish we could look at what the day money standing is. It'd be kind of fun to see who's done what, but he certainly would be on the day money list, not necessarily at the top of it, but 65 points today or whatever he's gotten. And he's consolidating his gains.
You know, and we should note that the Las Virgenes is following the Las Virgenes is. Oh,
look what the cat drug in.
I love it. Sit down.
Aaron Veracruzzi joining us here on the airwaves. How are you, my friend?
I've never been better. Thanks for asking. Nice to see you guys. It's been a little while.
You look great. You look like you've been out on the golf course a bit from that tan. More than usual.
Yeah.
What have you been up to?
Some of the best things since November when my time at Santa Anita was over. Hanging out with my kids over the holidays was awesome.
So cool.
Oregon Coast, Bandon Dunes trip. Played a little golf as you finally pointed out. Really took a break from racing, trying to figure out what the next step is and where I'm going.
It can help sometimes, that refreshing gambling too. I mean, like just
oh, yeah, all of it. Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, I didn't even see long shots win. So it was just like when I bet, because I don't see my long shots win then either. So it was kind of the same. Not much changed.
That's hilarious. Wow,
it's a timely visit because the horse yesterday, the Brary Jones horse.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. What a great gift that was. A couple years back, Brett Jones. I got to know Brett and Brereton Jones, and Brett texted me, "Mind if we name a filly after you?" And who says no to that? I'm like, wow, thank you. Kind of forgot about it, to be honest with you. I got an Equibase entry notice from somebody else. I didn't even know that she was running, and I saw it, and it really was one of the I've done some really cool things. It was one of the coolest things that has ever happened to me.
That's so cool. What a great tribute. You know,
I deserved. The minute I saw it, and I should have texted you right away when I saw the entry, because I was going through the maiden races, and I said, well, this has got to be for Aaron. I mean, there's no two ways about it.
Yeah, I don't know another Veracruzzi outside of my family, and I know it's not for any of those people. So I was hoping, yeah, that was the one.
But you know what?
She caught an off track. She was in a bad spot early. Not a career does one race make. I expect big things from her.
That's awesome. That's really very, very cool. Did you find yourself in your time away from the game missing it?
I miss the people, to be honest with you. I worked with a lot of great people and got to know great people like yourselves throughout the years. And, you know, you build those relationships in the industry, and you just can't replace that. You can't replace them. And I found myself missing a lot of the people for sure.
what brings you, and it might be the same answer, what brings you here to the NHC?
Well, I did a little VIP work at Santa Anita and got to know a lot of the players that actually play in the tournaments. The Eddie Logan Suite is a big place to go at Santa Anita. Yep. And yeah, you've heard of it. I've seen you there. But you know what? A couple of them qualified. A couple of my good friends, Florin Sima. Really good friend of mine.
He's doing okay.
Really good tournament player, too.
He
had two top 25 finishes in his two entries in the Pegasus Betting Challenge.
Terrific.
And it just came to actually cheer them on and take a little break from being a single dad.
I like it. Well, when I interviewed Florin, he gave you credit, actually, for getting him into the tournament game. What was it about his style of play that made you think tournaments would suit him, as they clearly have?
He handicaps all kinds of tracks. You know, if you just play one track, tournaments are kind of, they're difficult to win in the multiple track scheme. He handicaps all kinds of tracks, and he doesn't pick favorites. And so that right there is a
Two really good things.
1 + 1 = 2
Yeah.
When it comes to tournaments, those two things are probably necessary if you're going to be successful.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I see him now. He's got 74-60 on one card, 49-40 on the other. Have you checked in with him recently? How's he doing? He's got some work to do, but he's in good mental state?
Just left his table. There's a lot of Santa Anita going on downstairs.
Yeah, they're all down
there. Nate Newby's down there. By the way, JK's down there. Yeah, they're kind of treading water right now. A couple of long shots missed, but there's been some big prices so far today. So, I mean, it takes one race to get right back in it.
Yeah, that's $64 from a cap horse, and he'd be right in the hunt.
Shockingly, Florin got capped on a place.
Yeah.
It was a $30 horse to place, and he got capped. Yeah.
That was the Mexican horse in the mandatory.
Yeah, you only get the benefit of the $22 in that instance. That's
it's good and bad. It's good if you're trying to catch people that got that.
Yes.
It's bad if you got it.
Yes. So he could have used the extra 15, no doubt about it when it comes to that.
Let's put you to work. Aaron Bercruzzi with us, and Cruzzi is not going to take the 5-2 favorite in the Suncoast, I don't think. Tampa is next, and we're about 9 minutes. It is a mandatory. It's the start of the pick four at Tampa, and it's also the second leg of the pick five at both Tampa and the cross country. Pick five.
So you set me up to fall off a cliff.
No!
I say that because look at the tote board. 4-1, 4-1, 3-1, 5-2, yep. 6-1, 8-1. Like, pretty wide open race. I actually like the 7 point of honor, but I like the 6-1 morning line a lot better than the 5-2 current favorites. But wins by six as a favorite on a race washed off the turf at Gulfstream in December. And look, if you're going to freshen her up, and you're going to ship for a stake, I can see staying at Gulfstream and trying a stake. But when you ship for a stake, that to me just says she's ready. And I kind of like that jock that came from Gulfstream as well. So the 7 to me point of honor is probably the one to beat. At 5-2, I don't know if she's the one to bet, right? It kind of depends on where you are in the tournament.
Yes.
You change your method of operation throughout the tournament because you have to see where you need to go or you have to see how you stay there. And that really is the adjusting part, I think, is also a successful part of this game.
I would agree.
That winning envelope was 7-2 on the morning line, and you know, the Chris Block that is you know, got to negotiate the main track as part of the equation.
I told the Brits to bet her because I saw the first book over there that priced the race up had winning an envelope at 10-1.
Really?
And that was just too big. So I'm sort of pot committed there, as that's the horse I've given out publicly. Obviously, a little bit of a difference at 10-1 than as short as this. But, I mean, I still, if forced to make a pick in the race, I think the pedigree is going to be all right, and I think it's going to be a forward trip, and she can finish.
Third leg of the Rainbow Six is going off. Let's see what 28-1 shot wins this. So that some Hong Kong agency can be alive to take the pool down.
They'll change the currency over to U.S. Don't worry about it.
Casey, if you want to grab this race at Gulfstream, we're looking at this is what, the ninth, right? Are we up to the ninth? Yes. This is that next maiden group. There are three maiden turf miles today at Gulfstream. These are also fillies, and this was kind of a fun group, actually, and I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to look at the board, and we'll take them around as they looked like there's one maybe or two left to load in here. And I'm just pulling up the page for odds so I can tell you how the betting went. Chad Brown, Judd Mont was 3-1, and that looks like your favorite. No, 5-2. Can't buy me love.
And they're off. Shadow play was off a step slow. From the rail, Mia, Solo Mia, fires to the top from Dance and Dance, who's trying to get over from the high draw. Away on the top flight is Can't Buy Me Love into the top three. She races in the three path. Down at the inside goes Bohemian Bourbon, who's now only 2.5 lengths off the lead as the charger on the first turn. Mia, Solo Mia, leads the way a length and a half. Bohemian Bourbon is now racing in second. Can't Buy Me Love is third. Dance and Dance on the outside, fourth. Back at the inside goes Ebullient from fifth. In the two path, that's Akati Peace racing from sixth. Then it's a length and a half back to the team of To the Moon and Back. And on her outside goes Amandrea. She's about 7 lengths off the pace setter. 2.5 clear of Claws, who's unhurried at this stage under Irad Ortiz Jr. The three at the back are On the Town, Platinum Painter, and Shadow Play. The opening quarter was aggressive 22-3 as they go to the half mile point. Mia, Solo Mia, paves the path, leads by 2.5. Second is Bohemian Bourbon up on the outside. Can't Buy Me Love is now third. Looking to come on from fourth is Dance and Dance, held up between horses is Ebullient. Retreating a bit is To the Moon and Back, underway while needing racing room is Claws. Look out for Claws in the pink cap trying to thread through traffic here. It's a gap of three to the inside and On the Town. Shadow Play is the last to turn in as Mia, Solo Mia, confronted by Can't Buy Me Love. Can't Buy Me Love let go on the outside of Mia, Solo Mia. Claws down the center and charging hard with Amandrea. Final eighth of a mile. Here's the run from Claws, and she's charging at the leader, Can't Buy Me Love. Claws going two to the one of the second horse, and Claws and Irad Ortiz Jr. with a good-looking win. They went a length and a half in the end. Can't Buy Me Love second. Amandrea was third. On the Town ran fourth in 134-4.
Well, we're not just going to come back and say, oh, we dismissed Aaron. No,
you're not
going
to get out of here that easy. We gotta put your feet to the fire a little bit more. Make you talk about some races. Make us, you know, make you speculate about the future. All those comfortable questions like that.
Remember, I haven't watched racing in 3 months.
You know what? It might be good for you. I mean, come back at it. You know, with a new attitude.
Looking at fundamentals, all that kind of good stuff.
I surprised.
You're on.
I surprised some friends that I came in and they were telling me, you know, the Santa Anita track bias lately, and have I noticed it? And I looked at. No, I didn't notice it.
Didn't notice much about what's going on, it sounds like.
How about Chad Brown, though?
He wins a lot of races, that guy.
Yeah, I think he's gotten a couple of pictures taken this year, right?
Yeah, one or two. You see him win a few races. And he got that one done in the Judd Mont colors.
The favorites, the favorites ran 1-2,
yeah.
And that Amandrea ended up third, coming late under Jaramillo. For Mike Maker, and so your result 4-9-10 in that Gulfstream maiden race, and when they come back, that this will as a return to normalcy here through the first half of a difficult sequence where you had the $118 winner in the first leg of the Rainbow Six, and then a $26 winner in the second leg. Now was something that everybody's got. So if somehow you got through those first two legs, you're going to be safe. Now we've got that high profile allowance race with the Stanley Huff Sagamore runner, that global campaign. And so this will be worth watching whether you're involved in the pick six or not.
The top two in that Gulfstream race that just ran are going to be just fine. Even the runner up, a couple of nice races. To start the career. You mentioned Jaramillo aboard the third-place finisher, Steve, and it's nice to see him. He dominates when all the big jockeys leave and the championship meet ends, right? He dominates in Florida.
Well. Yeah.
It's nice to see him have a really good meet with the top riders there and show what he can do when given the stock to ride against some of the top jockeys. Really nice to see him click at higher than 20% in a really tough jockey colony.
That's a great point, and I do think it's also just a good point in general when you're looking at riders. Too many people will look at a winning percentage and think that's the measure of a rider. To me, it's not really. You need to filter that either by being a careful race watcher such as yourself or with further data, like correct your jockey's winning percentage by the odds. How often are they supposed to be winning based on the odds of the mounts that they have? That's going to tell a better story and help you as a horse player try to find some riders who are really moving up horses, even if their win percentage is 10% or whatever. Doesn't mean they're not a superior rider.
Well, my old partner Jeff Siegel used to say, Irad Ortiz is 6 for his last 10 for Chad Brown. I could have been 1 for 10 for Chad Brown. I could have not messed one of
your,
those
at
up.
At your weight?
10%. I'm a 10% jock. When you get the stock, you know. I tell you what, yesterday there was a Mike Maker first-time starter on grass and a maiden claimer.
We talked about the horse.
Kind of a descript, just ho-hum Friday afternoon at Gulfstream Park, 9-1. And if you go back and watch Jose Ortiz's ride on that, it is something to behold. It was really cool to see that.
Those guys are good, and we talked about Maker and what a wizard he is, and the horses he finds, and making subtle changes in the routines, and getting some real results. And that's a partnership I expect we'll see a lot more from.
We're about a minute to post. In fact, now we go to zero, and let's run down this field for the next mandatory and the start of the cross-country pick five. We had the pick five at Tampa start previously with Inspector Lindley. Her Royal Highness currently 9-2. Al Frisetto, nice owners for Grand Motion, and was 8-1 morning line. It took plenty of money. Winning envelope, I mentioned the Lothenback, Chris Block entrant here. Carlos Marquez Jr., 8-1. Tappet's Princess. Happy Alter coming over from Gulfstream with one of his own, of course. 7-2 for this Tappet filly. Lady Kate, who had the very nice debut for Eddie Keneally. He's magically delicious. Jose Ortiz aboard the Bernardini filly. Lady Kate, 4-1. Sacred Heart was a scratch. 36-1, your long shot. Here comes Jackie, Mike Denny, and my man, Willie Martinez, one of my favorites.
Point of honor.
I love Willie. Point of honor. And the Curlin filly for George Weaver, Eclipse and Stetson, 5-2. And then Twixt and Shout, not a great morning line of 4-1, currently 14-1. This is Godolphin, Discreet Cat, Owen Hardy training, and Jesus Castaneda aboard, and Mike Stidham. 9-2 with the Will Take Charge filly on the outside. Sweet Diane Antonio Gallardo Jr. aboard.
You know, the Four Lady Kate is really interesting to me. You know, Bernardini stands for 50. And Anderson Stables paid a pretty penny for her in the sale. And she'd made her debut at Gulfstream Park and was kind of chilly on the board for how much she cost. 8-1, Jose climbed on. Won the race. I'm not sure she doesn't move forward in a big way. At 8-1, if she was ready to run, I would expect her odds to be much lower than that in the debut. Now that she has that race under their belt, maybe they thought she needed one, and that's why you got $18 for a $2 win wager. Lady Kate may have some move forward in her off that debut run.
I could see it. Normal second out improvement is the positive. Kind of a wide trip that day. Might have even been a little bit better than it looked. Of course, first time against winners, always tricky. And if I were to put my contrarian hat on, did get a little bit of a setup to set up the late run. But, you know, we'll see what happens with the pace here.
You know, I have a saying for Tampa Bay Downs, and obviously this is a sun coast at Tampa. And since we're in Vegas, it makes a whole lot of sense. What happens at Tampa stays at Tampa. So when you ship in or you run big or you run bad, I don't know if that means a whole lot down the line, but you'll see that Tampa form sometimes be chaotic, and I wouldn't hold it against any of these fillies if they run bad, and I wouldn't put too much credit in if they run good, but I think a lot of the connections are looking for some stakes black type.
Makes perfect sense.
Working their way toward the gate, Golden Gate is completing the second, and you had a little bit of a tight finish there. Market King just won at Oaklawn, paid $8.60. You did have an $18.20 runner-up at Oaklawn, Royal Mesa, the one.
You know, there's usually a little more noise in here. It seems like there's some tense times right now in the tournament.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. We're at this critical point, and
it's getting to be do-or-die time, isn't it?
For sure. A little bit. For sure. I mean, we've got plenty of time, really, but you
depends on where you are on the board, but yeah.
You definitely need there's no reason to be keeping the powder dry. Let's put it that
way. Don't save the bullets.
Yeah, it's if you see something you like at a price, you got to go. But then if you don't, with a lot of people taking those kind of high-risk, high-reward plays, when you get a race where you don't have one of the vocal rooters hitting, you're going to have the sort of tone that you're hearing right now, where you can have three races go off and we barely heard a cheer.
Yeah, you know the $2 win place format really takes away the bet a lot to win a little, right? It takes that away. You have Chad Brown at 3-1, 5-2, doesn't really do anything for anybody, I don't think. And in the $2 win place show format, when you hear this room roar is when you see a horse 10-1 or higher win a race.
It correlates to, yeah, some you maybe in a mandatory, some wise guy 6-1 will get him out whooping and hollering, but you're at a point now where for most players in the tournament, you're absolutely right, 4-1 or less isn't going to do it for you.
It's a record number of entries this year, right? I mean, this is a big crowd.
It's right there. I think it's second most, but it's right there. Here's some excitement going on
at Fairgrounds as they come down the stretch, and you got kind of a loping finish, and we got a horse, the six coming like a freight train is going to get up. The Fairgrounds seventh, and we'll give you a quick price in there. 6-1, 6-1. Al Stahl, Corey Lannery.
Roger Satina seems to have hit something.
You know, so. You watch the big screen TVs and the horse crosses the wire, and then you still have people yelling because their computers say 8 seconds behind.
Aaron Bercruzzi's with us, and we're just about set at the Suncoast and the second of today's stakes at Tampa. It is Tampa Derby preview day, and here we go.
39th running of the Suncoast. Lady Kate is ridden for speed and gunning right for the early lead. Tappet's Princess comes away second. Here comes Jackie. We'll go to the turn three wide third. Winning Envelope is tucked in down along the inner rail fourth. And the favorite Point of Honor drops back and trails the field about 8 lengths off the pace setter. And the pace setter is Tappet's Princess. The margin now just 3 parts of a length. Lucky Kate. Lady
Fifth
Kate
year.
Moves to the leader now. Well in hand second. Long shot, here comes Jackie, travels along third. Sweet Diane on the far outside, fourth. Winning Envelope
is
tucked in down along the inner rail, racing along fifth. Twixt and Shout is alongside her now to be sixth, a length farther back. Her Royal Highness up on the outside. There goes Point of Honor, now making up ground with a wide trip as they leave the half-mile marker and make their way to the far turn. Tappet's Princess gives way, and Lady Kate and Ortiz going on with it. Sweet Diane is now set down for the drive third. 2.5 lengths farther back, Point of Honor. Okay. Now she's under an all-out ride, racing along fourth. Twixt and Shout is also gaining ground fifth. With a quarter of a mile to run, Lady Kate and Ortiz, they have the race to win or lose. Sweet Diane draws alongside, now to challenge second. Up on the outside, Point of Honor continues to grind away third, and they straighten away and cut to the wire in the Suncoast. Up on the outside, Point of Honor explodes and now moves to the lead. Along the rail is Lady Kate, but Point of Honor in front. Impressively, under Javier Castellano by a widening three. Lady Kate was second, Sweet Diane third. Winning Envelope flattens out to be fourth. The running time on the board, 139.78.
Well, Lady Kate ran a terrific race and did all the heavy lifting there and acquitted herself fine. At Point of Honor, very judiciously ridden and made the last and the right move. Very patient Javier Castellano, Hall of Fame type ride.
Yeah, well backed too at 5-2. You did hear some cheers though because of the mandatory type of race that was. But Point of Honor seems like the real deal. Very different trips for the top two though. Point of Honor dead last early on, just kind of waiting and biding her time. Boy, you're right about Lady Kate. She seems handy. She listens to the rider, Jose Ortiz. Asked her not once, but twice. She made two moves in that race. And those two, I thought, dominated. And both are going to be probably stakes-type fillies down the line as well.
Well, and Lady Kate took some late money. She took some late action. She got down to 3-1.
Into 3-1. People maybe had an inkling that it was going to be a forward trip in a race that I didn't think on paper was going to set up for one to come from last. But that's how good Point of Honor was to get the money in that race at Tampa.
And I'll tell you, just off a sprint debut, Steve.
Yeah.
Lady Kate, first time at shipping, first time routing, like just her second lifetime start. I'm impressed with both the winner and the runner-up. I think they're going to be very nice.
Yeah, there was one thing I haven't mentioned as part of the stake sequence, the fact that Owen Hardy, who, of course, has got Lady Kate, he ended up scratching the other Godolphin out of the Sam Davis, Cave Run, who was another of in a very similar vein, was going to be finally getting that chance to go two turns. You know, he had to get overhauled by Win in the Pasco, and so they're going to wait for something else. Be interesting to see what they do, and of course they the Godolphin team is well represented in here with Kentucky Wildcat, who is sort of the male equivalent of Point of Honor.
Yeah, well, look, Point of Honor, I look at her, Philly by Curlin out of a Bernardini mare. I think the further the better. She debuted going two turns and one, and the further the better, and boy, I'll tell you what, she looks like a budding superstar off that win, and you don't get any breakage whatsoever. $7 flat for a 5-2 from a 6-1 morning line.
George Weaver does such a good job.
He's the greatest.
Underrated. I think you guys are probably right. There's a bright future here, and a pedigree that says the longer the better.
Well, of course, there's a pretty good filly, 3-year-old, that's going to run in about 3 minutes at Santa Anita, and she's 1-9 as
that's my kind of play, isn't it? Oh, I'm all over that one.
She's hard to bet. It's hard to stand in her way. I think it's one to watch.
I tell you what, there might be some people out there that want me to go to the window and bet her, though, because the weight of my ticket sometimes could stop a train, and if they're trying to upset... Boy, I'll tell you what. Let me put some money on it, see what happens.
Let's get over to Aqueduct, Casey, and pick up John Imbrial with the call of the Wingfield and the stake there, which has got a nice little group.
3 seconds. Jovia has come on through now to grab the lead. Jovia by a head. Gates of Dawn is right there on the outside in second with Teak Vin Flu, the favorite, in third. Then comes Direct Order in fourth.
Forgiveness, not permission. Forgiveness, not permission.
5 seconds, it's still Jovia, the one to catch here. Haikal is gaining ground down at the rail. Teak Vin Flu is asked for more as the field comes off the turn and enters the stretch, and Teak Vin Flu is now coming up on the outside of Jovia. Haikal is down at the rail. Then it's Direct Order and Family Biz, and they're moving for the eighth pole. Teak Vin Flu, Jovia. Then comes Haikal in third, passing the 16th pole. Jovia trying to pull off the upset here. Haikal with racing room down at the rail. Here he comes. He got there. Haikal getting up in the final strides to win the Jimmy Wingfield. Haikal over Jovia, and then Teak Vin Flu, and the time was 1 minute, 25, and 1/5 seconds.
Kieran McLaughlin with the winner, and that's Haikal.
Haikal.
H-A-I-K-A-L. Haikal. Rajiv Marat aboard, and that was exciting because you had the long shot who was a bigger price than he should have been, Jovia, for Greg Sacco. And, of course, Greg Sacco got himself mind control that we're looking forward to coming back in the Gotham. But this one was late strides, looked like he was going to upset at 18-1.
Another one of these first time against winners. That didn't matter. Showed that improvement anyway and ran a big race. Definitely you could hear some folks, contest-wise, needing Jovia, but in the end, Haikal, too tough.
Yeah, you could hear it quiet down in the final three jumps exactly. Of that race as a 2-1 second choice does find room up the rail to get there in time.
Well, and looking back up at Gulfstream, they're going to start to head to the track, and this would be... Yeah, this is here's 3-5 at Gulfstream as they leave the paddock on Global Campaign, the Stanley Huff trainee, and it would be unbelievable. Stanley with this unexpected return to the training scene, doing this for Sagamore. He had been consulting, and when the opportunity arose to step in, at least for the time being, he's been the recipient of a bunch of horses that he actually was instrumental in Plank acquiring. So he's seeing the it'd be unbelievable if Stanley in his second tour of duty were to go onto the Derby trail with this horse.
I think really embracing this second chance and opportunity. A lot of his entrants, I think, are going to come out and run Huff Tough. I think he's going to have them ready to run.
He's always good at that, and it's good to see that name back in the PPs.
Well, here's an 8-1 at Laurel.
Now we're picking it up. Now we're getting some action.
Yeah. Trying to see if we recognize any of these people. There's some excitement.
Well, they didn't finish with the same enthusiasm.
Yeah, that was a sustained run that was not sustained. It did not.
Well, you don't want to waste your roots.
We got 13-1.